The Limited Liability Partnership Act received royal assent in July 2000 and introduced the availability of limited liability partnerships with effect from the 6th of April 2001. Let us look more closely at these three words. Limited Liability Partnership. The limited liability deals with the legal implications of being an LLP. For legal purposes, an LLP is very similar to a limited company. The word partnership relates more closely to the tax treatment, and for tax purposes, an LLP is very similar to a partnership. LLPs are generally set up by firms of professionals such as accountants and lawyers, who are required by the rules of their professions to operate as partnerships but who seek to have the protection of limited liability. In this session, we will look firstly at the legal implications and then move on to the tax treatment. Let us first look at the formalities of setting up an LLP. Forming an LLP is like forming a company. Two or more persons, known as initial subscribers, must deliver an incorporation document to the registrar of companies. The subscribers of an LLP are known as members. Thereafter, new members can be added by agreement of existing members, and members may leave as long as at least two remain. There is no upper limit. The members of an LLP are very similar to the shareholders in a company. LLPs must have at least two designated members. They are very similar to directors of companies. They are the members who are responsible for the management of the LLP. Their responsibilities include filing certain notices with the registrar, such as when a member leaves, signing and filing accounts, and appointing auditors, if required. This incorporation document must show the following information: the name of the LLP, the place of registration, either in England and Wales or in Scotland, the address of the LLP's registered office, the names and addresses of the members of the LLP. The document must also specify who the designated members are. The incorporation document may simply state that every member is also a designated member. Let us look closely at members of an LLP. Members' rights and duties may be governed by a separate agreement. This is advisable, as it clarifies each member's obligation to the LLP and to each other, but is not obligatory. Each member is an agent and may bind the LLP, so consequently, if I sign a contract in my capacity as a member of an LLP, that will not only bind me, but all the other members. Let us look now at members' interest, which is basically the share capital of the LLP. Each member's interest must be separately analysed as follows. It must show the capital contributed by each member, the loans to the LLP by each member, monies owed by the LLP in respect of profits for each member. Basically, this is any undrawn profit and any other amounts contributed by the member to the LLP. There are also accounting and audit requirements that LLPs must adhere to. LLPs are subject to similar audit requirements as limited companies, i.e., where turnover exceeds £5.6 million, an audit will be required. Where profits of the LLP exceed £200,000, the accounts must disclose the amount attributable to the highest paid member. When computing this profit, this is profit before members' remuneration. LLPs must file accounts and an annual return. On insolvency, the rules that apply to companies also apply to LLPs under the Insolvency Act of 1986. Let us now look at the income tax implications of being an LLP. The profits of a trading LLP are subject to income tax based on each member's share of the underlying profit. Let us say that we have an LLP which is owned 40% by Arthur, 30% by Brian, and 30% by Colin. Together, acting as an LLP, they generate £50,000 worth of profit in an accounting period. This is subject to tax on each member's respective share of that profit. Arthur is subject to tax on 40% of the profit, which is £20,000, and Brian and Colin are subject to tax on 30% of the profit, which is £15,000 each. This profit is entered on to their personal income tax return and subject to income tax in the usual way. Like a normal partnership, it is the members who are liable to tax, not the LLP. Also, like a normal partnership, members' salaries are not deductible in arriving at the taxable profit. LLP profits are also liable to Class 4 National Insurance, and each member will also be liable to Class 2 where the earnings of the LLP exceed the small earnings exception. LLP profits also qualify as relevant earnings for pension purposes. However, profits of a non-trading LLP are subject to corporation tax within the LLP. They are not subject to income tax on the members.
Every partner in a normal partnership has unlimited liability for all the debts and obligations of the partnership incurred while he is a partner. If a partnership has insufficient funds to meet its liabilities, the partners must contribute additional monies to ensure the liabilities are settled. It is therefore justified that, for tax purposes, loss relief is available in full for a normal partner. However, a member of an LLP has limited liability for the debts and obligations of the LLP incurred while he is a member. He enjoys limited liability. His liability is limited to the amount of capital he contributes to the LLP, plus any further amount he has agreed to pay if the LLP is wound up. It is therefore justifiable that, for tax purposes, loss relief claims under Section 64 or Section 72 of ITA 2007 and Section 261B of TCGA 1992, i.e. sideways loss relief, are restricted to each member's contribution to the LLP. These loss relief provisions set the member's share of the LLP loss against non-LLP income and gains, which is why the restriction applies. For this purpose, the member's contribution to the LLP is calculated as the capital introduced plus the amount of money the member would have to pay on a winding up of the LLP. It is the cumulative sideways loss relief for LLP losses which cannot exceed the member's contribution to the LLP. In other words, the maximum sideways loss relief available for LLP losses equals the maximum amount the LLP member would personally stand to lose if the LLP was wound up. There is, however, no restriction on the relief available for the LLP losses against trading income from the LLP.
Let us take a look at an illustration. Steve is a member of an LLP. He has subscribed for £20,000 worth of capital in the LLP and has agreed to contribute a further £10,000 if the LLP is wound up. Steve works full-time for the LLP. In the year ended 31st of December 2010, the LLP makes a loss of £100,000 for the first time. Steve's share of that loss is 40%. Steve's share of that loss is therefore £40,000. However, under a Section 64 or 72 ITA 2007 claim, or under Section 261 TCGA 1992 claim, he can only utilise £30,000 worth of the loss against non-LLP income and gains. That is the £20,000 that he has already subscribed in the LLP, plus £10,000 that he has agreed to contribute if the LLP were to be wound up. If Steve claims loss relief under Section 64 for the whole £30,000 of loss in 2010-11, he will not then be able to make any future sideways loss relief claims, that is, claims against his net income and gains. The sideways loss relief restriction applies to his total sideways loss relief claims. It is not an annual limit. Additionally, the £25,000 annual limit for the amount of sideways loss relief that can be claimed by a non-active partner, that we saw in the previous session, also applies to a non-active member of an LLP. This means that the maximum sideways loss relief which can be claimed by a non-active member of an LLP in a tax year is the lower of £25,000 or the member's unrelieved capital contribution. The non-active member's unrelieved capital contribution is simply the member's contribution to the LLP, which has not already been used up by previous sideways loss relief claims. If, in the previous illustration, Steve had been a non-active member of the LLP, The maximum sideways loss relief claim he could have made in 2010-11 would have therefore been for £25,000 of the loss.
There is no restriction of losses carried forward under Section 83, where they are carried forward against future trading profits from the same trade. Consequently, in the illustration above, the unrelieved balance of Steve's loss may be carried forward and set against future profits from the LLP in respect of the same trade.
Let us now look at capital taxes, starting with capital gains tax. Each member owns an underlying share of each LLP asset. Let us say we have an individual who owns 40% of an LLP, which is a trading LLP. The LLP owns a property. The property is sold, realizing a capital gain of £100,000.
This particular member will be personally liable to CGT on £40,000 of gain, which he will have to disclose on his income tax return for the relevant tax year. However, this £40,000 will be eligible for rollover relief if a replacement asset is found within the rollover relief period.
However, non-trading LLP gains are subject to corporation tax within the LLP. Looking at inheritance tax, a share in an LLP qualifies for business property relief at 100%. However, assets held outside the LLP, i.e. in perhaps an individual member's own name, which are used for trading purposes by the LLP, then 50% BPR will be available in those circumstances. Let us now look at the implications of a transfer of a normal partnership to an LLP. This is often known as incorporation of a partnership, as an LLP is treated as a partnership for tax purposes. Where it is a trading LLP, there is a very smooth transition of a partnership into an LLP.
There is no cessation of trade. No balancing allowances or charges will arise, and there will be no triggering of overlap relief. This is provided that the transfer creates an LLP identical to the partnership,
i.e. the same trade is carried on by the new LLP, involving the same partners, and is not a demerger. For instance, let us say we have an accountancy practice that offers audit and accounting and tax consultancy. If we transfer just the tax consultancy into an LLP, that would be a demerger, and that would trigger a cessation of that tax consultancy trade in respect of the partners. If, however, we transferred everything into the new LLP, that would not give rise to any cessation provisions. For VAT purposes, the transfer is treated as a transfer of a going concern and is outside the scope of VAT.
Finally, let's round off this session by looking at some of the disadvantages of an LLP over a limited company.
LLP profits are subject to income tax, which means that when we reach profits of around £45,000 per member, 40% tax is due. Some LLP members may also be subject to 50% income tax on some of their profits.
However, company profits are subject to corporation tax. The small company's rate of 21% applies to profits as high as £300,000.
However, the downside of this is that salaries are subject to tax and Class 1 primary and secondary national insurance, which is more expensive than Classes 2 and 4. However, if we extract profits from a limited company by way of a dividend, we do not have to pay any national insurance at all. Finally, where we set up an LLP, we cannot take advantage of EIS or Enterprise Management Incentive Reliefs, as these are only available to companies. Consequently, it could mean that it is more difficult for us to find external investors because they will be unable to claim EIS relief and we cannot award EMI options to any members of staff. That concludes this session on limited liability partnerships.